Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut on Eagle FM and Dwight. It's Friday and it's a good afternoon by greetings only, because the whole of today's Home Run is Valentius Maximus.
Yeah, it is, guys.
And in the interest of full disclosure, we did not start the violence. It was started by the UN General Assembly on the 25th.
On Wednesday.
Yeah.
We held out this discussion because we didn't want to rush into things yesterday. You know, we planned yesterday's discussion for yesterday's session. But we kept this particular globally relevant, Namibia linked or Namibia connected topic, primarily is because Namibia has begun something in 2020, but it actually began in 2006, and it now takes a completely different direction. Okay, it's not a direction that takes it off course, but it's actually a direction that actually pushes it into the next chapter of, if I can use anthropology for this scenario, meaning how the whole world will actually interact with each other after this. And there have been interactions.
Oh yeah, there have been.
Well, it started firstly in the UN, but I'll hand over to Helmut now.
Very uncomfortable.
To kick us off into sort of like the prologue / intro of our talk.
Thank you very much. You know how from last year, the African Union's theme, and I understand they did extend it to this year, right? The one for addressing
history. No, they extended to 10 years.
They extended to 10 years from last year.
We did not hear of the 10-year thing,
but
because it would have clashed with the tradition of having a theme every year, they just decided to announce
it
sort of like in November.
Just
make it a decade.
It's a decade.
Yeah.
So the theme is addressing historical injustice like slavery, colonialism, and apartheid. Now, I think Ghana is, Ghana was basically spearheading this whole, this whole thing from the look of things. If you look at the UN, if you look at the UN website, that's basically, describes what went on the 25th of March, 2026 at the UN General Assembly. And also put in mind, this is the International Day for Remembrance of Victims of Slavery and Transatlantic Slavery. Yeah. Of slavery and transatlantic slave.
Mm.
Yeah. And this is the same time, they basically, in commemoration, not commemoration, because there's nothing to commemorate about that. It's more like remembrance. Let's just use the word remembrance. Now, what, according to the UN website here is that, the resolution spearheaded. Now, the resolution here, the UN resolution urges reparation for slavery's historical wrongs. That's on the UN website. That, just from the heading itself, that's when I went, this is going to be one interesting conversation. You can imagine the atmosphere in the UN General Assembly when this was taking place. Now, the resolution spearheaded by Ghana received 132 votes in favor. That means those are the ones that said, let's just let's call a spade a spade. Now, three countries, Argentina, Israel, and the United States, voted against. No surprises there. And 52 abstained. Now, on the 52 abstained, they could have just said, the whole Europe abstained. Now, when you look at it like that, you are having a whole different view on history. Number one, why is Ghana spearheading this? Why is Ghana at the forefront of this? I'm pretty sure there's a lot of reasons, but one that anyone that basically understands a brief history of Ghana, of slavery and Ghana and how it impacted especially countries like Ghana, then you understand that the Elmina or the Saint George Castle is still standing to this day, and that's located in Ghana. That was a major, it was basically a port city.
There's a guy I watched, who was interviewed by one of the international news stations by Deutsche Welle. The guy said there's something like 7 of these forts in Ghana.
7 of them?
7.
Now, these are basically, Elmina, I'm just calling it, is it St. George Castle?
Mm.
Now, this thing is located in central region of Ghana. It's part of a port city.
Mm.
Now, this is a place where you have slave chains in the basement and a church on top.
Oh, yes. People were very religious back then, you know. They had to stay in touch with the times, specifically from the Holy Book.
There's one gentleman that, I don't know what happened in his life recently, made a video saying that, look, I don't understand when people say they don't want to get in a relationship anymore, because this whole heartbreak thing is, it's very painful when you get emotionally attached. Now, let's bring that to this day. Every time that someone wants to punch you in the face every time you open the good book in their face, it's because of histories like this.
Yep.
Now, you have a group of people that basically decided, they're going to be going to church Monday, every Sunday, and then basically stand on top of the people that were chained and ready to be sold like cargo. And just decided, you know what, let's just sing and worship and ask the Lord for our forgiveness. And put in mind most of the scriptures that were, most of the Bible versions that were provided to most of the enslaved people, these were heavily redacted. So they made sure to remove all the verses that had to do, especially those ones that involved, God freeing the people out of slavery. Those ones, you can't be a slave owner and, have your slaves reading passages of scripture like that. Now, Ghana, it's actually understandable why Ghana, not just Ghana, but the whole of Africa, but especially why Ghana is spearheading this. Because some of the structures, and this again is all across the African continent, basically the entire wherever the British reached their not very nice fingers.
Mm.
Yeah. You have these structures that are still standing, that have very dark historical past with regards to transatlantic slavery. Now. So you have the theme that's going with, that's centered on reparations coming out of the African Union that's set to run for the next 10 years. And you have, now, Ghana, obviously part of the AU, and spearheading a motion forward with regards to let's call a spade a spade. We're talking about, is it Algeria, that changed their constitution to...
No, that added the law.
To their constitution all the evil that was basically done by France during colonialism, when basically France was doing what the British were doing in Ghana.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, and then 25th...
I don't even want to know what the Portuguese were doing in West Africa.
Because
the Portuguese, the document itself highlights 500 years of the Atlantic slave trade.
One part that I really don't like every time that we have these conversations is how, again, for the millionth time, and I keep pointing this out, we don't want to bring out the economic incentives which was the main lubricant of the entire industry. It's very easy to look at it like it's the Argentinian government, or it's the American government, or the Israeli government. You have to look at the you also have to look at the private sector, because these were the guys with the checks that made everything move.
Oh.
titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
eye.
Welcome back. We continue. Now, it's countries, it's basically political powers of different countries that met on the 25th of March 2026 to carry out this voting.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, there are a lot of, these different governments are the official representatives of their different, different private sectors in their countries. But, I think things would be somewhat slightly different if when you just start looking at it from the angle of, Dutch East India Company?
The world's largest company.
Yeah, I think those guys were their own government because that.
They were literally. It's literally the same thing that also happened to the British East India Company.
Yeah,
they were making laws in other countries.
Yeah,
they weren't subject to the laws of the Dutch Crown. Only when they were in the Netherlands.
I think that's low key what.
Also happened to the British East India Company. They made up laws when they were working with the Indian Rajas. So what am I saying? India wasn't a unified country back then.
Yeah.
But imagine Bangladesh and Pakistan part of the territory. Now, in between the Indians, obviously when they are now trying to change their history, which was the big argument back in 2024 regarding the Mughal era. The Mughal era was when India experienced, or that whole neighborhood of those three countries experienced, civilizational advancements through the format of arts, through the format of trade, through the formats of other particular thing, even because usually you see it in military technology, where they had the Muslim Raj, or the Muslim emperor, technically. At that time, the Mughal guys.
Yeah.
The guy that built the Taj Mahal for the one wife.
The times of Shah Jahan.
Yeah. He was one of those guys.
Yeah.
Or he came from that dynasty. Now.
14th child. What was he thinking?
Now, the Mughal Empire was one of the sort of like, how can I put this? It was one of the things, it was one of the entities in India or in Asia that was against the, for example, the British East India Company and the Dutch East India Company. Because remember, these guys existed almost at one stage. They were existing close to each other.
Yeah.
Or the one followed after the other one. But what we cannot deny is that both of these two countries, the Netherlands and the United Kingdom, enjoyed what today historians would call a gilded age. Now, if you don't know what a gilded age is, guys, and you'll sometimes hear this for example, for all those young ladies and ladies, and I am assuming that you guys also listen to us, the young ladies and ladies, primarily when you guys love watching your Bridgerton TV series or you watch your other British period dramas from the Jane Austen era and all that. That was a particular time when they were enjoying so much, I'll use the other British term, windfall. Windfall meaning it's a massive positive gain financially in many scenarios from the colonial territories or the specific markets that were accessed. And here's one of the key things that economics usually forgets, but because they try speaking from a John Maynard Keynes perspective, because this has been proven by neutral economics professors, the two guys that I watch. Jeffrey Sachs doesn't go much into this, but the two guys that I watch, Richard Murphy and something Keen. What's the guy's name? He's an Australian. The one is a British. Both of them cite that the modern economics that economists around the world learn today, Helmut, is based upon John Maynard Keynes. Now, John Maynard Keynes is almost like a copycat of the Austrian School of Economics. And who called the Austrian School of Economics that name? Who was the guys making fun of the Austrians? The German economists. Because the German economists believed in a welfare state, a state that looks after its people, but people ultimately also participate in it. So when you have to look at colonialism, primarily, at the heart of what this resolution tries to speak of, and yes, it has all the lingo and all the language of being it has that that humanist approach, you know, recalling that you have to identify that you can't diminish someone's rights. We're recalling that there are still inequalities that exist between countries today. Because guess what? The United Kingdom, because there was this also, if you watch some of the interesting documentaries around gold and the gold reserves, where did some of these European countries get their gold reserves? Leave the Swiss, Helmut. Leave the Swiss out of this for now.
Don't ruin it for me.
Just for now. Just for now. But when you look at the UK, at one stage the UK had the world's largest gold reserve. But where did they get it?
I think we have an excellent example. If you take, for example, just look at countries that have been invaded. I'll give you two examples. Libya. And
in recent history,
yeah, and Iraq. What do you think happened to those countries' natural resources reserves?
They are being administered by foreign companies.
Yeah, because
Even best, Helmut, use Iran. Start from Iran. Start from Mohammad Mossadegh, 1953. And when does the UN actually start? I think it was 1951 or 1950.
The UN starts from the UN from 1940s.
It's because it's not from 1946. They were still busy with the Nuremberg trials. But let's assume 1946, because when did what is it that the Palestinians call the Palestinians the Nakba? When did the Nakba begin? 1950, right? Or 1949?
Okay, 1948 is when they started accepting guests who turned into.
Okay, so it's 1948. So it's literally 1948. Now, between 1946 and that 1948 period, the Americans were still trying to convince those other countries, those that were supposedly independent, of establishing, of reviving, let's call it, a reincarnation of the League of Nations.
1940, the UN turned 80 last year. That takes you to 1940. It takes you to 1945.
You are right. It takes us to 1945 directly. So, because the Americans were still trying to convince countries, let's reincarnate. Let's revive and then reincarnate the soul of the League of Nations. But what was the issue with the League of Nations 1.0?
The thing is, the Japanese were like, you know what? Can we just all be equal then if we are making an international organization?
Exactly. And who did the British and the French bring to that, that Treaty of Versailles? No, the Versailles Palace engaged negotiation. Who did they bring? They probably brought the R word, racist Australian politician ever to walk under the sun. He was most busy at that stage when he went to France. He was most busy at that stage promoting a policy of the Europeanization of Australia. He said the only, and this is an active, these are active documents you can find on the internet, guys. He said literally the only immigrant he wants are immigrants from Poland, from was Poland, Latvia. No, it was Poland, Czech Republic, Slovakia, those Germanic based countries.
Yeah.
And anyone else who has a European, sort of like origin story can come along. This meant, Helmut, that clearly what you can see, which is the definitions of genocide, is that he was actively pursuing a policy of trying to outpopulate the Aboriginal population, which are known as the Aborigines in Australia.
Yeah.
But they actually have a different name. He was trying to outpopulate the native populations. Now, if you sit with that one micro picture like this, that the founding, the spirit of the League of Nations, which is the resurrected ghost now parading as the United Nations, had a fundamental problem. And it's the fundamental problem, dear listeners, that you even see today. Because if you go look up, just go Google search, just go type in this following question in your Google search bar. Why did Europe vote to abstain? Ask yourself this. The United States voted no. So don't worry about the US. We know that Donald Trump said at the end of 2024, he hates the UN. He wants to withdraw from UN agencies, but they withdraw only so far so as to maintain the UN Security Council role.
Now, here's one thing that you can, that had become very apparent. It was somewhat, discreet. It was done discreetly for a very long time, but it has become more and more apparent. Apparent. It's more like the cat is out of the bag now.
Yeah.
And that's
multiple cats.
These are multiple cats.
Yeah.
And that's because if you look at how empires operate, again, I know that the easiest example to use today is the US because that's, we're living under that, more like imperial system.
Yeah.
Every time any country or an organization goes against the interest of an empire, it's rendered, it's criticized. Take the ICC, for example. February 2022, every Western country recognized the legitimacy of the ICC at the beginning of the Russia-Ukraine war. And now, fast forward to 2023, Israel starts bombing the heck out of Gaza. All of a sudden, the ICC doesn't have any legal legitimacy. So in other words, it's all about convenience. When it's working for me, I will recognize its significance.
Mm-hmm.
But every time that it goes against my interest, it's just one of those. I think it was Mike Pompeo, who was the CIA director back in 2014-2015, when the ICC was, tried to launch an investigation in possible war crimes committed by U.S. service members in the in the Middle East, especially I think Afghanistan and Iran. It was Mike Pompeo that was on on national TV called the ICC a kangaroo court.
Yeah.
Now again, what you see here is that when an organization or a country's interest or when its rules, when their way of doing things aligns with alliance with the imperial interest, there's nothing wrong with it. As soon as that organization goes against the imperial interest, it's given any negative label you can think of. Now that's an organization. The same thing is happening with in the Middle East with Iran right now. Every news media coming out of the East, coming out of the West that you watch, the Iran, it's American government versus Iranian regime. It's buried in the language.
Yeah, John Stewart now says, who is the guy? It's not just John Stewart. There's the guy from LBC, UK, James O'Brien. Both of them actually said the same sentence this week. Who do we believe more? Donald Trump, who is flip-flopping every 40 seconds? Or do you actually start to believe the authoritarian regime of Iran?
Quote-unquote authoritarian. Again, the authoritarian part is one of those labels.
Exactly.
If you don't do things my way, authoritarian.
I will use my media to label you in a different way.
Exactly.
We all have that one thing only we do. That unique thing that makes you real, just like Vintuk beer.
For some, it's that secret handshake thing that makes you feel like family. For others, it's that brave hold my beer thing when the moment calls for courage. For friends, it's that fun podcast and cooler box thing where the best memories are made.
And for Vintuk beer, it's that barley, hops and water thing. Let's raise a Vintuk beer for that real thing only you do. 100% real beer for real people. Not for sale to persons under 18. Drink responsibly.
You know, there's something about opening a Chafer Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, and once people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared, laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Chafer Lager and start the conversation. Chafer Lager, now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Just a minute past the hour of five, and welcome back. So, for now, for those of you that like to run around and say, you know what, I'm not into politics. Well, congratulations. Well, 1 April, politics is reaching you. So, if you ask me, it's just better to know what's going on than, you know, living in a cocoon. I mean, you can just go back in a cocoon, but, you know, service stations will remind you on the 1st of April that, hey, politics don't reach me. Oh. Now, moving on. The way imperial organizations work, it's not just, you know, imperial countries. It's not just the U.S. You can imagine the British operated the same, you know, they were running basically the same ship. If you were in line with what they were doing, there was nothing wrong with you. But as soon as you got out of line, you were given each and every single negative definition under the sun. And, one thing is, it actually works. Smear campaign works.
No, it does.
Yeah.
That's how the WMD.
Weapons of mass destruction.
Lie was perpetuated. Which we all announced looking at American and British media like going, but you guys are so easily. You so easily.
Why should I believe you now?
But they're so easily fooled because much of that was done. You put a politician, a high-level politician, to you know, continue announcing the same message over and over and over, and then they say we've got intelligence, and when those media guys ask for intelligence, the intelligence was just pulled out of someone's neck from somewhere.
Pulled it out of thin air.
And I was almost going down. Something crude, Helmut, so I had to stop myself. And the whole discussion itself was one based upon, okay, so who can lie the best? That's why you're seeing the apprehension in 2026 regarding the Iran war. But there's something interesting also in this discussion of reparations. So the guys who pride themselves on having the biggest empire before they handed it over to the Americans, the British. So, at last year's Samoa Commonwealth engagement, the British King was there. Charles was in Samoa, in Apia. And Charles was asked by most, and guess from where most of the Commonwealth nations come from, Helmut. Most of them come from Africa and South and the Caribbean and from the Pacific Island nations. The Asian guys were not saying as much, but the broader presence was African and Caribbean. Mm-hmm. So now, the Jamaicans obviously now decided, you know what? Let's ask him directly in terms of what role will he play in terms of advancing reparations discussions to the Caribbean and impacted African countries. Because Ghana's main issue, which is also Nigeria's main issue, let's put them together, even though they have this love-hate relationship.
The jollof rice problem.
Yeah, they've got that situation there between each other.
Yeah. It's a good thing those guys are not, they are not immediate neighbors.
No, they are.
Ghana and Nigeria?
They border each other.
Mm, no, they don't.
They do, Hamad. Is there someone between them?
Yeah.
But anyway, they've got that, okay, plus the guy in between them, they've got this weird relationship there between each other. But they were both colonized by the same country, by the British.
Actually, Ghana and Nigeria have Benin and Togo in between them.
So that's how far they are.
Yeah.
So when you look at that particular relationship then, Togo obviously, which was a German territory before it was given to the British as well. No, to the French, because they now have French.
Mm-hmm.
Benin is obviously French. The conversation that emanates from what happened last year in Apia, Samoa, was this is now a ticking clock, especially against the UK and Spain.
Spain, South America is going to come for them big time.
And guess who abstained?
Spain.
Spain abstained. Portugal abstained.
Yeah.
With the emotional speech that Brazil's president Lula da Silva made also on Tuesday, he made it it was an engagement of South American, Caribbean and African countries. Because immediately after that engagement, who's the country? Colombia and Ghana signed a direct trade agreement, meaning shipping will move directly between a Colombian port and a Ghanaian court. So, which actually also shows, which is one of the particular conversations by that, by the Brazilian ambassador back in 2024, when our former colleague Justicia attended, the Brazilian ambassador's engagement with the Ministry of Trade officials regarding Mercosur connecting directly to Namibia or to this neighborhood of Southern Africa on the West Coast, which is because it just makes sense, Helmut, to trade like this. Other than your stuff first going through Europe or going through North America and then being distributed to the other parts of the world.
Yeah.
So, the Spanish king was also recognized. Not last week, the week before. He gave a televised apology for Spain's role in colonialism. Which means they knew about this resolution that happened on Wednesday.
Oh, no, of course they knew.
They knew that it was going to be voted in favor.
You know what's worse?
Yeah.
Most of the torture devices that were used, especially during the Spanish Inquisition,
yeah,
you can find them in museums across the world.
So they were used on the slaves?
The most gruesome one that I have at least seen being filmed by travelers in different museums were coming out of, ancient Rome. Yeah, look.
No, the Romans weren't. They weren't cupcakes, Helmut. Do you know that I now discover why the Romans gave Jesus the vinegar water?
If you were a woman those days, nah.
Do you know why the Romans gave Jesus?
Chances of being accused, if you are labeled a witch, no one needed evidence. All they just needed was several people to agree that you're a witch.
Needed a whole bunch of people that could not read, that woman is the only woman in the village that can read. The parents decided to send her to a monastery.
All you have to do is read.
Yeah, all you have to do is just read.
You are in trouble.
And you just have to share ideas, that just sound a bit too far for the lowest thinking threshold in the village.
No.
You're a witch.
Let me tell you just how bad these guys did not want women. Sorry, lady. Now, look.
We've got our colleague here talking with those guys.
Have you heard of the singers known as Castratos?
Why does that sound like the name, the precursor to the word castration?
Exactly. That's it. The thing is, these guys needed,
were eunuchs.
They were eunuchs. That's a fancy way of saying, no more future generation for you. Now, look, the thing is, these guys wanted, like a female, like a high pitch type of, high register voice. Now, there are two type of people that have high register voices, women and little boys.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, when a boy transition into a man.
It does.
Yeah.
Because you take out the testosterone out of the person. The testosterone
is the one that changes the voice.
Producing element.
Yeah.
The reason why I've got this bass in my voice is because of the testosterone in my
And
life. Okay.
Now, the thing is, to make sure that this boy, the problem was, when these boys grew up, testosterone obviously kicked in, then their voices changed, so they kept losing them.
Yeah.
Then they came up with a brilliant idea. How about we start castrating them at a very early age, so their voices don't change?
Which gives
rise. And it worked. Look, dude.
What's
they
the
had,
character from Game of Thrones?
They had one job.
Littlefinger.
Oh, Littlefinger.
No, not Littlefinger. The other guy. The guy with the bald head. The
oh,
guy with the
yeah,
spies.
That one, yeah. The one with the...
With the, guy, the one that, that had
and
the spies.
And he's very creative with words.
Yeah.
It turns out, bro, as a worker.
Because Littlefinger was the political manipulator.
Yeah, or something else.
Yeah.
Now, they had one job. Just allow women to come in the church and sing. They would rather castrate kids than allow... Jeez, just help...
Look, there was a lot of misogyny. Let's just be honest.
Holy God.
There was a lot of misogyny. The worst part is, like I said, if your parents decided to teach you how to read words, or you were curious as a girl back then, under the Spanish Inquisition period, and you were, someone accidentally taught you how to learn letters. Now you know how to read the recipes. So now you try to cook things. Now you're told, she's conjuring up spirits here to make this delicious food that ended up in my belly.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Who said eat it?
Someone has flu.
It's her fault.
Yeah.
Now.
The problem is I have flu because you can read. What the heck?
I'm not, we're off point by now, but yeah.
The point I'm trying to make here, Dwight, is those are the guys that ran around the world telling you that we are bringing you civilization.
Through Christianity.
What civilization are you bringing me? You're busy castrating kids so they can sing with high register voices when they grow up.
Mm.
Explain to me how that makes sense.
Yeah. So.
It doesn't. Now, getting back to this. If you look at the countries that abstained and countries that just went straight up no, they're all heavily involved in colonialism. And basically, just think of it as subjugation. And now, I wasn't shocked at the whole, you know, I wasn't shocked at the U.S. And
I wasn't also shocked at the U.S. And
Argentina.
And Israel and Argentina.
Now, what I was shocked, what I found shocking was Argentina and Israel agree on one thing.
We obviously know why, because of the influence, obviously, that the current American administration has in Argentina. You know, have you heard of the stories of that $2 billion that was supposedly donated to Argentina last year?
Really?
Haven't you heard of that story? How Javier Milei went and, you know, said, yeah, thank you to my American friends for giving this direct $2 billion US dollar linkage, skipping the IMF and World Bank, because an IMF, technically the World Bank represents the private banks of the global north.
Yeah.
I didn't realize this up until last year, and I heard it once, and I was like, is this correct?
Britain.
And then AJ Banga went and explained it again. I represent the major retail banks of the global north that invest in the global south.
And the capital city of banks, what's this, the Bank of International Settlement, is in Switzerland.
Exactly. The most dubious country in the world, obviously.
Very questionable.
That you would not want to trust with.
They
banking.
Like to abstain in any conflict, but one thing I like about the Swiss is I think they are more into soft power. They don't like muscle flexing like military, even though they have, I think, the most bankers of any country I know.
But they were easily spooked by probably the weakest country on this continent, Ghana.
All Ghana did was
all Ghana said was, we don't want you to process chocolate anymore in Switzerland.
And they were like, hey, Nestle.
hey, Lind. Hey, you must understand now, guys.
Mass, abort mission, abort. Now, the thing is, what you have here is, now that's actually an excellent example. This was in 2021 with Nana Akufo-Addo. And his point was, we would like to add value addition to our own cocoa because Ghana and Ivory Coast basically supply the global chocolate market.
Yeah.
And what the Ghanaian president of the representing obviously the Ghanaian government was that we would like to process we would basically want to make our own chocolate in Ghana. The Swiss leadership did not like that because they know that their private sector heavily relies on that resources for their final product, which is what? Chocolate.
Mm.
And I walked in a shop to see, but my God, those things are expensive.
Yeah, there's a chocolate this in one of the retailers. There's a chocolate now, Helmut. I mean, it's literally smaller than the Beacon and Cadbury, the conventional slab, you know, the 20 block that you buy from Beacon and Cadbury.
Yeah.
This other brand starts at almost like $40 for smaller blocks. Smaller and less.
Dwight, there was a time in my life when I tried to be romantic. And
who did you try to
donuts.
Romance?
Long story.
With Le Choclet.
Le Choclet.
Yeah.
So I was really, you know what, let me just be romantic. So I walked past this.
Don't tell me you bought a Ferrero Rocher.
Wanted to. Now, there's a reason why behind wanted to. Because I looked at the 32 boxes, the 300 as well. Okay. Look.
Oh, chocolate, 300 bucks.
Look, man. Look, he's not. Look, I'm not that delusional.
Yeah, you could have just bought a lunch bar, Helmut.
I'm standing there going, $300.
You should see the four. The four units of the Ferrero Rocher.
What?
That's not like I think above 50, but it's below 100. But it's above 50 for four or five of those little balls. Of chocolate.
Now, the way of looking at this is simple. What you are looking at is, you know, if you look at the tier, if we can just, the excellent example we can use here is Iran.
Mm.
Iran, basically, 1953, so overthrow of Mohammad Mossadegh draws an excellent template of how, basically developed countries operate, especially the British and the Americans.
Mm.
First of all, if you look at, the war that basically led to the chaos that's increasing the prices come first of April.
Mm.
You know, a president came to office after realizing that, you know what, because, you know, this was a pressure at the time and they had this whole monarchy going on. So Mohammed Mossadegh just wanted to nationalize the resources, which would then benefit the Iranian people.
Oh, now, no, he wanted to do the same thing that we just spoke about, that Nana Akufo-Addo did.
Yeah, that.
Bring value addition.
Not a good idea. So British Petroleum did not like that. Now, how the whole thing transitioned now, although it's not, it wasn't British Petroleum at the time, it was Anglo-Iranian Oil. Mm. Although it was just Anglo-Iranian by name, but financially it was more like Anglo-Anglian Oil.
And spirit, it was definitely Anglo-Anglo.
Anglo-Anglo. Now, now, what did the Anglo-Iranian do? According to your declassified documents, Anglo-Iranian took obviously a lot of money and then gave it to the intelligence community of the Americans and the British. This is MI5 and the CIA.
Mm.
Now, these guys, then start a smear campaign in Iran that a lot of people that I'm not into politics fell for.
Mm.
They basically helped the British and the Americans overthrow their own president.
Democratically elected.
The guy they voted for, you have to understand how important information is. These guys were basically convinced into overthrowing the very same person they voted for.
Mm.
And they did. Now, after that, what happens is obviously Shah Pahlavi comes in.
He gets installed.
Yeah, he gets installed in, and this guy goes full dictatorship from day one.
Yeah.
For 20 like, plus years, yay! They didn't have a problem with that.
And then when they started seeing what he was doing, they were like, no, what kind of a dick? And then what did the Americans start doing? They started funding and helping a radical Islamic cleric, Khamenei. The guy that was, no, Khomeini. Yeah. Khomeini, the first guy. They helped him. And what did Khomeini do? He stormed the American, him and a bunch of the guys that died now recently. They stormed the American embassy in 1979.
And now it's a museum, by the way.
Espionage. No, I saw a streamer's, a full day stream, an Australian. He flew last year to Tehran. And he was even given a tour. He was even given books, Helmut, educational material to read as an Australian. But, okay. We obviously expanded greatly into the Iran discussion, but let me start off from a philosophic position, Almut. So, the interesting thing, dear listeners, from the vote that took place on Wednesday was 123 voted yes. Ne? Predominantly, that was the Global South. 52 voted no. 52 abstained and 3 voted no. The 52 who abstained is basically the entire Europe, including Vietnam or Cambodia, one of the two countries. The entire Europe. Now, I know we slightly, just before this, bringing you back on course of what happened back on Wednesday, was a discussion of showing how bad colonialism in the modern day era can look like. But looking at the crux of the matter has been Europe, the whole of Europe, abstained. Now, I looked up the question, why would Europe abstain? Why would Europe abstain? Now, there's this outlet, I shared it with Helmut just before we stepped in. It's known as the European Network Against Racism. It's an NGO, definitely. And they themselves described, they wrote this quick blog or this quick explainer yesterday, they wrote it yesterday, but they obviously highlight the vote of Wednesday. And they noted specifically that Europe's issue on this is that Europe has programs and policies, because they've got an anti-racism program running now from 2026 to 2030 something. Let me just be sure about that. Yeah, to 2030, EU anti-racism strategy. But what's currently happening on the political spectrum for Europe is that there are so many individual European EU members who are moving back towards highly conservative, and they call it right-wing, possible governments. So, for example, in Italy, where Giorgia Meloni began that Mattei plan, that you and I highlighted with the Italy-Africa conference, or the Italy-AU engagement that took place at the start of 2024, where she literally said in her speech, we as Europe will try and help to keep you guys, Africans, in your countries. We don't want your migrants coming to us. In a summarized way.
You know one thing I like about Giorgia Meloni?
Yeah.
One, she tries to be honest. Two...
No, I think she's withholding how honest she can be.
She's holding herself back. Yeah, because she did say something to France that you can imagine the French didn't like. If you don't want these immigrants to be coming to your country, just leave their countries alone.
Which is true.
She was right.
No, but no one understands what's going on between the French and the French-speaking Africans.
And
they are not being honest with us.
It's a love-hate relationship.
No, it's not a love-hate. They voted to be part of France. That's why their presidents are honorary members of the French Parliament.
Those are just presidents. The people on the ground would beg to differ. Look, the thing about the whole voting to side or more like sign all those agreements being part of France.
Mm.
The reason why I have a little bit of a problem with that is there is a leader that decided to vote no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Secretary decided, you know what, since we are given this option of saying, we can say no if you want.
Mm.
He said, you know what, you can just keep your policies, your economic and diplomatic policies. I'll just see if I can run my country myself.
Mm.
Yeah.
It didn't go very well.
It was, the French intelligence basically sabotaged every program he tried to put in place to run his own country. In other words, publicly, France was telling them, you can have this independence. But privately, they were telling them, don't you dare. Now.
Don't even think of
it. Yeah. Now, at this point, you are the, the guy who, pre-ordered a signed copy of the Bible, the president of Cameroon. The thing is.
He did. Why? Who did he order it from, Edward? I hope it was a pope.
Guy's 95. Look, the point is.
Who did he order it from, Helmut? It's either the best joke you've said so far,
It's safe to assume here that homeboy witnessed Moses parting the Red Sea.
Oh.
And he's still has been in office for a very long time. And Now,
is he the longest serving, or is it Museveni again?
No, I think between those two.
Yeah, because Museveni is like in his 30-something.
I know he holds. I know the Cameroonian president holds the record for being like the oldest serving president.
Yeah,
but well, that's just them. So, France gave French colonies a choice. Mm. Just picture the agreement that the British signed to, with the Chinese. When the British took over Hong Kong.
Mm.
That was after the British, that was after China lost on the battlefield. They didn't have a lot of negotiating power.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were basically strong armed into signing whatever agreement was on the table. And, it's somewhat the same thing if it's taking place right now. The same thing that you can imagine, Trump wants to do with Iran right now. And anyone that have read the America First Global Health Strategy and the, National Security Strategy coming out of the US. If you have read even a sentence out of those documents, then you can easily get a picture of just how terrible empires are at diplomacy.
Plus, you'll also get a sense of impending threat towards your country because it's literally what he's doing with regards to Venezuela. Venezuela is now sort of like being promoted as a success story for him. Imagine you live in a country.
Venezuela?
No, just any country.
Okay.
And you hear how your presidential palace is being attacked, how your president is being kidnapped, arrested, manhandled. Knock on wood. I don't want to bring any bad luck to us. The security services or the personnel that looked after the president of that country is killed in a horrific invasion manner. And now you see someone else's president saying, yeah, we've captured and we've arrested the president of your country. Just imagine that scenario, Helmut. Now, imagine the humiliation you would then feel as a nation.
It is
humiliating. Now, obviously, there's a whole bunch of guys probably somewhere, a generation known as the Gen Zs, who think that Call of Duty somehow is a very nice thing to do.
But imagine
that thing in real life. Mm-hmm. It is not funny. It is not funny.
Now, again, if you draw the whole inspiration behind basically the fuel that drives most of these things, including slavery, by the way, because there's a lot of private interest that was involved in slave trade.
Mm.
And in every policy that's being pushed by every government, and that includes Namibia, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's a lot of, obviously every country wants to create a market for its private sector.
Mm.
Now, the thing is, there's nothing wrong with you basically sitting with, across the table with with another nation's leader to negotiate a marketplace in their country for your private sector.
Mm.
Yeah. The thing is, if you have a strong enough military power, like a lot of Western countries, you don't have to negotiate.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can just storm in guns blazing.
Or you can just say, hey, listen, I've got a, you see those big guys outside?
Yeah. It's either you say yes to me or those guys are going to come in and you don't want them to come in.
Which is known as duress. So, yeah. Helmut, we'll quickly take a short break and we'll come back right after that.
Lipura nengeno wapubwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite okoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana. Onongeshe fa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda beni nawa. Nuneudo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka. Okone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamoiri nawa ninge patafanona Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
We quickly take a chance to listen to a live read from Tafelaga.
Don't you think we're lucky we get to use our voices for change?
What do you mean?
Well, we're on radio, so we get to be here for it all. Big talk, small talk, hashtag real talk, DMCs and the WTFs. Because talking, that's thinking out loud. It's lending your voice to something you care about.
Yeah, it's really not so simple finding your voice. It actually takes real bravery.
Exactly. But you know what? It's really important because that's when magic happens, ideas spark, spirits rise, dreams form.
Yes, and that's why your voice is something worth finding. So, grab a Tafelaga and start a conversation today. Because it's really not just about drinking, it's about what you're sharing. Tafelaga, now we are talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana unongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo IGL FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi kayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge kwa Tafanona, Monica ko IGL FM onore tatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafilane IGL FM VI.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back from that extended commercial break. 28 minutes left to the hour of 6, and we are still looking at the not very shocking resolution, UN resolution results on slavery and the transatlantic slave trade.
Actually, it is shocking, Helmut.
In what way?
If you read the literal descriptor that the resolution document from the UN's website gives, how they had to start from 1966. From 1966, the UN only decided to acknowledge, you know what, certain things are not good. Having to afford literally new member nations an identity, because you don't want to sit with a Japan League of Nations situation again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just to quickly read that small little list that I recognized in the explainer itself of the UN resolution. So, okay, I'm just waiting for this thing to refresh. So they had to start with like over a course of like 70 years or 60 years. They had to start with having to look at things like, first identify this through this resolution that everyone has equal rights around the world. You can't just come up with that. What's that? The Charter on Human Rights? The international charter one?
Is it the UN charter?
Yeah, but that specific UN charter. And when you go and look at what forms the basis for this discussion, you go like, okay, so they had this one thing, but if a member nation comes through who was a former colony of the United Kingdom, one of the Security Council guys, you've got a problem. So, just reading this document, because you have to go through so many particular links to get there. Why did I download the Arabic one of all things?
Really?
I downloaded the Arabic.
You can't be serious.
I downloaded the Arabic document. So it starts off with the indication specifically of, it goes, which was now a pledge. Now they start off recalling the aims of the Charter of the United Nations. Then they go on to highlight human rights, the Universal Declaration. Then they go on underscoring the International Covenant. Then reaffirming the Durban Declaration. We know about that. That began, I think that was 2012, 2011, there about the Durban Declaration, but it was revisited once again last year and the year before. Then they go underlining 23 December 2013. There's a resolution there. For the International Decade of People of African Descent, and immediately you know it's regarding the damage that the transatlantic slave trade caused. Recalling the Declaration on Future Generations. Recalling the 26 October 1966 Resolution 2142, in which it proclaimed 21 March as the International Day of the Elimination of Racial Discrimination. And remember, in the 60s, Martin Luther King was highly active.
Yeah.
And the Americans, obviously being also a founding country of the United Nations, immediately you would have assumed that they play a pivotal role in this discussion. Also highlighting 28 November 2006, where it designates or the International Day of Elimination of Racial Discrimination. That's Resolution 6119 of 2006. And it goes on highlighting all these particular resolutions up until 5 December 2025, which designates 14 December as the International Day Against Colonialism in all its forms and manifestations. Now, I get to this particular talking point, to this particular point in our discussion, primarily to reinforce the discussion of why did Europe abstain? Why did Europe abstain? Now, guys, when someone sometimes abstains from participating, sometimes it's a strategic motive, or it's a strategic move they're trying to make.
Especially in the world of geopolitics, everything is a strategy. Donald Trump is an exception. But
the US and Israel in this discussion are exceptions because they clearly would say no to anything that comes up from the global south.
Yeah.
Even though the conversation right now is how does the global south try to develop? How do they try to develop?
Look, the thing is, you totally have to agree with Henry Kissinger on this one. Mm. If it doesn't benefit me, I'm not going to side with it. If it infringes on my right, on my interest in any way, I'm not going to side with it.
Mm.
It's simple.
And when you look at that particular thinking, Helmut, it comes up with the other thinking that I heard a little bit earlier when we were preparing for this discussion.
Yeah.
It's a conversation where I asked the sibling of mine who did political science, you know, why would Europe abstain? And I was given an explanation which I've heard a few times before. Currently right now, what plays out, if we look at Namibia, like for example, Namibia's genocide discussion,
yeah.
You would sometimes hear some people, not historians or mainstream academics, but some people would argue with the perspective of saying, but it was that government's period. Go and talk to that imperial German government back then under Otto von Bismarck. But Otto von Bismarck has passed away now for almost 200 years. So how can we go and resurrect a guy to go and ask him, why did you start with this? Why did you entertain the Berlin Conference of 1880? Was it 1884 or 1886? And, you know, why did you do this? Now, you will hear that narrative pop up. And then you will also hear, to qualify that narrative, they will say, but that was the policy of then to start colonialism. And then they will sort of like negate that explanation with this following sentence of potentially saying, but now there's no longer colonialism. We don't champion colonialism.
That was until Marco Rubio's speech at the
Munich Security Council, where literally Rubio shows up and says, you Europeans must be proud of your colonialism. Yeah. Now,
you know that thing that you did to my ancestors? Bravo.
Now, do you think the Africans, when they looked at that Munich Security, if they looked at it, I am assuming they also watched it because it was for free on YouTube. You can still watch it. If when they saw that speech by Rubio, do you think any African would think that that's a joke?
No.
Actually, the South Americans want to break away from the influence, specifically like the Monroe Doctrine that the Americans brought forward. Because the Americans in the 1800s went and said, We don't want any colonial European powers in the Americas because it puts a threat on America's independence. Because you had the Spanish literally before the Mexicans became independent on the American border.
Yeah.
You had the Spanish in Venezuela, in Colombia, before the Bolivarian Republic popped up. The Bolivarian Republic would have included Venezuela, Colombia, and Ecuador. It would have been a super country, Helmut.
Mm-hmm.
Before Brazil became independent, the Portuguese were there. And before the rest of South America became independent, the Spanish were there. Now, ask yourself, why would the Americans bring in the Monroe Doctrine? And the last vestige of Spanish colonialism, the last vestige, the last stronghold, was Cuba. It was the last time and the only time when America and Spain were actually at war. Why, Helmut? Because the American sugarcane farmers and tobacco farmers wanted to move into Cuba.
Of course. It always has a bunch of private interest guys behind whoever's, you know, government officials' press conference you are watching.
Exactly. You know, I'd rather like us to develop this green hydrogen thing. I don't want anyone to pump a barrel of oil. Because I don't want to be invaded, Helmut. I don't want democracy. I like my democracy.
Too late. Already billions are already in there.
I like my democracy as it is. I don't want to face the threat.
You know, in 2011, Reuters wrote an article about BlackRock, the giant asset management firm.
Yeah,
where they said that the nationalization of natural resources, especially in the mining sector, is a threat to foreign investment.
Mm.
So they were cooked mostly like a lot on social media. So what I'm looking at is first of all, BlackRock has $12-13 trillion of asset management, you know, of asset under management, and those are not their assets; those are their clients' assets. Mm. Now,
and who are those clients?
Who are those clients? Yeah, exactly. Now that's the question: who are those clients? So that's why it sounds scary for me that coming from BlackRock, that means like every business, they are willing to do anything that their clients want. So. Which did not surprise me then. Now in 2021, now let's start with in 2021 the UN passed like 11 draft resolutions to basically covering the use of mercenaries.
Mm.
Yeah, covering the use of mercenaries. 124 countries voted in favor. 54 countries voted against. 54 countries abstained. 124 voted in favor of the use of mercenaries.
Yeah.
And 54 countries voted, decided to abstain. And 2 voted against. You can guess which 2.
Saudi Arabia?
Nah.
Oman?
Nope.
Qatar?
You are way far.
Okay.
Change the continent.
Oh, no. Okay, let me leave it there. But I'll guess the whole thing.
It's Israel and the US.
Okay, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And then in 2020, which year was that? Yeah, in 2020, there's another resolution that was voted to basically declare food a human right. Yeah, 2021.
Mm.
Just shortly after the COVID-19. The United Nations, they decided to put forward a resolution, saying that, food to be declared a human right. 2 countries voted against the US and Israel. At this point, I'm going, is there anything that you guys are going to vote in favor of?
Mm.
No. That's very easy to do. All you just have to do is bring up something that's against China or Russia or Iran. And those guys will be on top of the list of saying, you know what? We agree. UN, we agree with you on this one. Why? It's because those countries.
We all have that one thing only we do. That unique thing that makes you real. Just like Vintuk beer.
For some, it's that secret handshake thing that makes you feel like family. For others, it's that brave hold my beer thing when the moment calls for courage.
For friends, it's that fun podcast and cooler box thing where the best memories are made.
And for Vintook beer, it's that barley, hops, and water thing. Let's raise a Vintook beer for that real thing only you do. 100% real beer for real people. Not for sale to persons under 18. Drink responsibly.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
eye. The eye.
Welcome back. We have 14 minutes left to the hour of 6. So that means let's now talk about the conversations that we are not having. From the look of things, Europe is going to, you know, European countries abstaining. And by the way, the countries that also voted against, the land is very, the people that voted are not native to all that land.
Mm.
So you may as well just lump them into the European category. So the thing is, these guys, the reason why Europe right now would abstain is, they know that if you look, for example, at the African Union, a theme that is set to run for 10 years, it speaks to, let's have the conversation around, around reparations. So that means if you vote yes, that means you are ready to move to the next stage of the conversation, which is about reparation. And low key, I have a sneaky suspicion they are avoiding that, moving from, let's talk about it to, condemning it legally so that we can move on to the next part, which is reparations. Now, that's on the European part.
Yeah.
Now, on the African part, on the other hand, the conversation we have been avoiding every time we talk about
ourselves.
Yeah. We don't want to acknowledge that, let's face it, we played a role in this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, I mean,
we participated
in the slave trade.
We don't talk about it.
We did, guys.
Yeah, we did.
There's no beating about the bush.
Nope.
Do you know what's the worst part, Herman? Who sits with all the receipts?
Who's that?
Who sits with all the information?
The British.
All the Europeans. Trade accounts, which chief they spoke to, which chief. It's even the things like in Namibia's own genocide history.
Someone thought it was a brilliant idea to exchange a human being for a bottle of whiskey.
Or for rum.
We have those stories here.
Rum.
Wait, what?
Sometimes they gave them rum, not even whiskey. How would you know it's whiskey? Come on.
Now,
surely, yeah, the taste is different, but to anyone else in modern day times, flame water is flame water, you know?
That part of the conversation we don't want to have.
Yeah.
And another part of the conversation I feel like we Africans don't want to have is that we had tribal bickering before much of a bunch of European guys showed up.
Yeah.
And then they basically decided to take advantage of those tribal tensions by picking one side and telling them, you know what,
we
will help you conquer your enemies. And they fell for it. Halfway through, they realized that these guys were basically screwing them way worse than their enemies were, tribally.
Yeah.
So by the time that you saw a lot of tribal kings and queens basically across the African continent uniting to fight against the European imperialism, they have already sunk their roots way too deep.
I mean, when I did the one Sunday morning, my Sunday morning show discussion, Helmut, about Liberia, which is Africa's oldest independent country.
Yeah.
Who started Liberia? The Americans. Why did they start Liberia? They started Liberia for recently emancipated slaves in America who wanted to go back to the African continent. But many of the people did not know where they came from, meaning geographically. They knew they were from Africa, but geographically, they didn't know the place.
Yeah.
Because obviously, us Africans, we didn't have ships and maritime discoveries and stuff to go and say, ah, you see that big stone over there, that's where I'm from. So what the Americans did is that they just lumped everyone together, bought a large piece of land between, I think, one of the French-speaking territories and where the British wanted to go and expand into new territory.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave the land to everyone there. They gave that land, which we now know as Liberia, to those formerly emancipated North American slaves. The downside was, Helmut, there was literally one of those particular African chieftains in that country of Liberia,
yeah,
who was doing exactly the thing that we just highlighted now. He was participating in slave trade. In slave trading. Because what was he doing? He would go and make war with one of the other groups that he just decided, you know what, I need now my monthly fix of whatever is done.
Yeah.
He would go and declare war on a group or a tribe. And because the port facility there was a port facility right next to the main sort of like town of Liberia before it became the capital city. Was there was another like loading station, not a port facility, but like think of it like a loading station with temporary facilities. Said temporary facilities also included holding cells.
Yeah.
And this guy would regularly go and capture people and sell them to the literal European slave traders that he had this connection with. And when these newly emancipated American slaves, former slaves, were given Liberia, Helmut. Do you guess who he tried to attack?
Huh?
The chieftain, the African chieftain. He tried to attack the recently, because they built a fort for themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
Now in the fort.
You know what? It's not happening again.
Now back then, how it used to work, you would build a fort around the living quarters. So people didn't live outside of the military.
The ancient Romans basically did. They like to build, walls around whole cities.
Exactly. So you could defend everyone. So that was the situation. Now, homeboy, this chieftain tried to attack where these technically people now that have their own piece of land, because he wasn't told about this new piece of land. He just saw people show up. He was actually told, but he was like, ah, you know what? I'll consider this arrangement. And he tried to attack this particular settlement because he saw, okay, let me also go and, see if I can get new cargo to sell, which is not such a good description to use of a fellow human.
Yeah.
But that's literally what happened back then, guys. So, yeah, there's a lot of damage there, specifically. And we Africans, we have to recognize our particular role in this conversation as well. Reason being, we have to see what happens next because Europe's abstention is a peculiar one. Look, you can always count on possibly the Americans and the British saying no, or even the French. You can always assume those three guys, but the whole of the EU abstaining from participating. Reason being, the Dutch flew in 2024 to come and say, I'm sorry, in Cape Town. Yeah, it was a lovely experiment of society that happened there. The Belgian king flew that same year in 2024 to the DRC to go and apologize. The British king, Charles, tried to say, some sort of an apologetic scenario situation in Samoa last year. But that only happened because the Caribbean countries started saying, you know what, where's our reparations? We are people of African diaspora that were displaced, forcefully displaced in the Caribbean. And you can even go and see the broader impacts on countries like India. And India would have a major claim, Helmut. There's no joke. Countries like India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, there's another, Malaysia. I'm missing someone else as well. Not even the Philippines moved much. But many of those, many people from those four countries were people that were also placed, they were brought from those various territories also to Africa or to the Caribbean region of the Atlantic. So it's no surprise that the big BRICS countries went and voted yes, including Russia, surprisingly.
Oh, no, when it comes to that, the Russians have nothing to worry about because they didn't have to scout to run around the world to basically steal natural resources. I think that's primarily because they have all the resources in their country.
Most of it.
Now, the country I don't understand, like, why they didn't, you know, just go full bananas on that are the Chinese. Like, one thing that, you know, they have been so, like, they're more like, they have been introverted for the most part of history. They have their own internal school. The Japanese, on the other hand, oh, those guys were busy. But the Chinese.
But even the Japanese voted yes, Humble.
The Japanese
even
voted
the South
yes.
Koreans voted yes.
Yeah. No, look, the thing is, if you look at it, just look at it this way, Dwight. Every country that voted yes has, you know, is native to the land it's associated to.
Guess who voted? Guess who also abstained?
Who is that?
Canada, Australia, New Zealand.
To the land they are associated to. In New Zealand.
Because they're still dominions of the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
Did you guys know that, guys?
Now,
fun fact.
Here's the thing. If you look at it, it's very simple. Argentina is predominantly a bunch of guys that just caused a Second World War chaos, and then they ran away to modern-day Argentina. Mm. Yeah, and...
And First World War.
Thank you. Yeah. And, you know, First and Second World War, and then they ran, basically established the whole country. You can imagine what they did to the natives in that, you know, in the very country they ran to. So, again, on foreign land... Israel, 1940, that's the easiest. You know, just the chaos, the subject is still hot to this day. It's in the UN, and the whole, all resolutions have been passed by the UN, basically telling them, dude, we still have videos of you guys arriving on a boat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know that.
Yeah, you know that. I mean, the Americans, maybe we don't have videos of them, but you guys, we do. You did it, you know, a little late when cameras were invented.
And guess who helped you? The UK.
Now you understand why.
Yeah.
So, Israel is having on a heavily, heavily disputed territory. And the Americans, basically same WhatsApp group, Canada, throw them in that bucket. Australia, you know, prison tent country. And New Zealand, same WhatsApp group. So.
The Australians don't like being called a convict nation.
A what nation?
A convict nation.
Well, it's in their history books. Now, look, Australia for me is an easy example it has always been about class. It has nothing, it has never been about skin color. It's always been, about class. Because if you look at the founding of Australia, these were, you know, elite class ruling white people that basically looked at the underprivileged financially white people and literally wanted to get rid of them. So, and they did. They just decided to load them on ships and take them to where? Modern day Australia. Now, this was not black versus, you know, these were not white people getting rid of black people. Again, the story of Australia just tells me that it has nothing to do with skin color. It's about social class. And, high social class have always considered themselves to be, up there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, we have Australia today, which was a prison colony. All you had to do was just, do anything wrong and you're on a boat, shipped off. And they realized that, the land is actually rich. They decided to turn it into a country by going to the very same people they wanted to get rid of and telling them, you know what? You are different. You're one of us. All of a sudden, you're one of us. Those ones that you have been living with, for a very long time, ever since we abandoned you here, they are your enemies. And they believed it again. And you have apartheid.
You know, there's something about opening a Tafel Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, and once people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared, laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Tafel Lager and start the conversation. Tafel Lager, now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Mo passage ka Shoprite out ku pe enda do dire pe vi o ko chapure na wa. To chapura e chapure ne ne name me fene ne kwa mwe na ho rike ye. Ta shiningwa no ku kupita o shimaruwa kini manga shi. O mai ro ista gero mirongo bari naga ne ro Mr. Sweet Marshmallow Eggs. Mene dora o mirongo ngwe no ngwe ne senda o mirongo ngwe no ngwe mo ka pakete. O ka shako kusira we pungu ko Champion Super Maize Meal. Ke kilo dilwa mrongo o ke dore sere na ne ne senda o mirongo ngwe no ngwe enda do dika. O dinongo shizu kwa masiku ga mano ga tiriri o bura o etonji o ko Shoprite akuke.
A minute past the hour of six. Welcome back. Just time to wrap this whole thing up. Well, look, this whole resolution, I think the biggest elephant in the room with this whole resolution and basically UN as an organization is how it's being undermined right now, with especially with what's going on in the Middle East. And you can just look at a lot of countries, you know, a lot of countries, especially the US, they just don't want to, the US and Israel, they don't want to listen to the, you know, to the UN over anything. You can take, now you can take what's going, what has been going on in Gaza, and you can take what's, you can take what's been going on in the Middle East for a very long time, and you can look at what's, you know, the war between, you know, the war with Iran right now, and you can look at Venezuela. All those things have been saying over and over again. This is against international law, against international law. At this point, it's becoming a song, and everyone is asking, just, do you have any power? And that takes me back to a very simple principle, a very simple, simple principle. Making a law without any means of enforcing it kind of renders it obsolete.
But it's just been the bigger part of this discussion, Helmut, because even if anyone goes and views, let's say you decided to now go and look at the relationship specifically of how Israel specifically has this privileged position. So when I say privileged position, 27 February is a very good example of this. The Wednesday of that week, people were still hearing that the US and Iran were negotiating in Geneva. Just for bombs starting to fly on the Saturday, literally 2 days later. So what changed? Who decided to shoot what? The accusation is, and this is from people in the United States, and from media observers that were paying attention to the discourse that happened immediately that day, is that it seemed the Americans were caught like off guard, by what the Israelis did. And it was the Israelis who decided to attack. Now, in many cases, the discussions that have highlighted regarding, you know, why does Israel have this privileged position has been, and we all know this, has been because of the British and the Americans, obviously, providing said particular Big Brother stay, Big Brother cover for Israel. And, you know, it doesn't matter how many times UN-related agencies will come and say, but what's happening, for example, in the West Bank, in Gaza, this here, that there, this there, the Israelis just don't care. I mean, what has popped up recently, Helmut, is a discussion of, what do they call it? The Greater Israel discussion. Have you ever heard of this?
Yeah, I've heard of that. It's some giant religious mumbo-jumbo.
Yeah.
Look,
but they actually, the soldiers, have it on their patches.
Do you know one thing that, who is this, you know, Peter Thiel went viral for?
This thing of last week.
Yeah.
Where he went to Rome.
Uh-huh.
I didn't want to watch the report because I might get angry as a Catholic. Not that I practice, but nostiets, you know.
This is a tech billionaire who went to someone that just decided to dedicate his whole life to religion. Really? That's like the Pope showing up in Silicon Valley and saying, you know what, this, you know, let me show you how to wire these components. Who would listen to him?
No one.
Well, that's what Peter Thiel is basically did, if he, you know, if he's still not doing it. He went to Rome. you know, I have to admire the bravery. But I think that's, you know, that points to what the UN Secretary General pointed out in the 2026 priorities press conference.
Oh, about the...
The transfer of power.
Yeah.
Yeah, from people to tech billionaires. I think tech billionaires are beginning to get drunk because they have so much power. And if you look at the advancement of technology, they are going to acquire even more of that.
No, and they are busy acquiring.
Yeah. They are busy acquiring more of that. And that's why after the whole, you know, I read the whole Elon Musk, you know, get out of here, you know, with the whole Starlink discussion here in Namibia. I'm like, I mean,
he reacted to us. He reacted to us.
No, I don't care. I just like, you know, I personally just like the decision that the Namibian government made.
Yeah. Which I also support.
Yeah. Look, the point is, tech billionaires are becoming a little too drunk on power. They're becoming a little bit too difficult to rule. It's like once you open the door and let them in, you'll have trouble telling them what to do. They just want to go full cowboy.
I mean,
taking the word of God to the Pope. Now that's new. Now,
as if he's ever been religious.
No, he's never been religious.
Yeah.
So 6 minutes into business and economic segment. Let's wait and see where this discussion is, this is gonna go. And, I think Europe's fear is that, if we vote yes, then the next conversation will be reparation and we don't wanna pay, obviously. That's the picture that it's drawing to me. And again, Africans are also embarrassed to have like the honest part of the discussion about, you know, about who sold who, because it's kind of embarrassing to read, you know, to tell a story of how your, you know, your ancestor sold one of your own for sugar. Sugar, people, sugar.
I'm laughing, guys, but that's literally what happened.
Like, are you that hungry? Until Sunday, I almost said Monday.
Until Sunday as well for me, guys. Alternatively, you can catch us Monday again here on The Home Run.
Yeah.